This is Five Times Steve Surprises Eddie, a Stranger Things fanfic written by N.B. Futureboy and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated PG-13 and contains the pairing Steve Harrington, Eddie Munson, with additional tags for Eddie Munson Lives, Post-Season 4, Getting Together, Flirting, Dungeons & Dragons references, Developing Relationship, 80s Music, Lord of the Rings references, First Kiss, Five Times Fic. Author's Notes. And one time, Eddie surprises Steve. Written for the Roll for Initiative zine. 1. So as it turns out, Eddie's gonna kick it in another dimension. Sounds cool in theory. Sucks in practice. Who knew? This whole thing is gonna turn out to be a little less shuffling off this mortal coil, and a little more torn to shreds raw by flying piranha demons. Which isn't the most peaceful way to pass on, if he's being brutally honest about the situation. "We're avoiding the bats," says Nancy through her teeth. "Stop whining. We're almost at my house, and then we're going to figure out how to get back to our version of Hawkins." "I'm not whining," Eddie says, picking his way over the vines and following Robin's cautious, clumsy footsteps as best he can. "Look at me, Wheeler. I'm on top of the world. It's not every day that world isn't Earth, either, so I'm enjoying it while it lasts." Robin exhales shakily. "Come on, Eddie. We made it this far, right? Against the odds? We're working on it. We'll figure it out." "How can anyone work on this situation?" screams Eddie's panicky internal monologue. He elects not to express this outburst. "I'm just thinking, though. My feet are killing me. If this is the last thing I ever do, that's gonna suck. Because there's so much I haven't done. I haven't graduated," he starts, "because that's the big one. Wish I'd managed that."
"You will," Robin reassures him.
"Nah, I won't," he says, stuffing his hands into his pockets. "No point kidding myself. The future's gone down the crapper in one lake dive, Buckley. I'll never sail out Madison Square Garden. I'll never get inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Never got to act on that crush on Josh Brolin I've been nursing," he adds, "or go to a pottery class, or finally watch the Cannonball Run with Wayne like he wanted to."
"Eddie, could you please cram it?" Nancy explodes.
And he promptly crams it, because she's literally 90 pounds soaking wet right now, but Nancy Wheeler could kick his sorry ass in any dimension. Suddenly, the bats are looking like a much more preferable option. Eddie falls back in step with Steve. The girls lead the way.
Man, Wayne had really wanted to watch that movie someday. Now they're never going to get to rent it from the family video.
Or, more likely, get Gareth to pirate it for them. That kid's a fucking whiz with a video camera and a VCR.
On his right, stepping identically between the Vecna vines and the brittle brush of the Upside Down, Steve clears his throat.
"Uh-oh.
Josh Brolin?" he asks. It's quiet enough that the girls can probably tell they're talking, but not what's actually being said.
"Like, the guy from the Goonies? The brother?"
"Yeah,"
Eddie admits. Steve snorts.
"Henderson made you watch that too, huh?"
"Nah, believe it or not, I actually enjoy adventure movies," says Eddie, thinking about a similar crush on Indiana Jones.
"But I did watch it with all my little sheep, sure. It was a mutual viewing."
It had been a decent day, that trip to the movie theater.
"Not that it's gonna happen again."
"Too fucking bad, huh?"
Eddie continues, and scuffs his sneakers across the brush.
"Bye-bye, Brolin. Guess I'm gonna guy a single man." This blows.
He exhales noisily to punctuate his point. Nancy whips her attention backwards for a second to glare at him. And beside him, Steve ponders the whole sorry situation for a couple of crunchy upside-down steps. This sucks.
This blows. This is a veritable vacuum cleaner of bullshit.
Eventually, Steve purses his lips and jerks his head awkwardly toward the floor.
You don't have to,
he says, almost too quietly to pick up.
I'm here, you know?
Eddie snorts.
Steve, come on. You can land basically anyone in the whole damn town.
But when he glances up to gauge his reaction, Steve's eyebrows are raised in a way that seems to say,
what about you then? Oh. That's not solidarity. That's an offer.
And underneath the heat rising through his neck, Eddie is not totally sure about it.
Hello, no prior experience, and zero prospect of gaining it in Hawkins. Are you for real? It'd be so damn hard, he complains. Nobody wants to deal with all my bullshit, man. The stuff everyone hates. The D&D, the music, the people that think I'm a vessel for the devil harassing me every damn day. The list goes on, Eddie says, cautiously omitting latent homosexuality from said list. If you want to sign up for that overwhelming dose of chaos, then be my guest, my friend. There's no fucking cue, I'll tell you that.
All right.
It's a near miss, but Eddie manages not to choke to death. What did you say?
I said, all right, says Steve,
as casual as anything, as if they're arranging to carpool next semester, instead of Steve agreeing to be Eddie's last-ditch boyfriend attempt prior to their grisly, monster-inflicted death.
Eddie stares at him.
He can't think of any other way to respond.
This seems to unnerve Steve, who bites the inside of his cheek and turns his gaze to the floor again.
Well, you were the one who put yourself out there. I was just...
Never mind.
No, Eddie says hastily. No, not never mind. There's a gargantuan, floor-shaking roar from somewhere in the distance.
Robin stumbles, only for Nancy to seize her by the sleeves and stop her from toppling over.
Eddie moves into Steve's personal space without thinking.
And Steve lets him press against the denim. But their conversation gets cut short, and there's not really an organic way to bring it up again once the upside down kicks off.
Two. He's gotta admire how resilient these kids are at the end of the day. It's not even a couple of months after the Creel House showdown, and the little shits are already pestering Eddie to DM a few sessions. To which he agrees, of course. Apparently, they've roped Steve into their shenanigans, too, because for the third week running, the guy is reading Sports Illustrated in his ex-girlfriend's basement at 7 p.m. on a Wednesday, and doing his best to ignore everyone. It doesn't seem to be working for him very well.
You don't have to be here, you know.
Eddie reminds him.
This might take 3 or 4 hours. Again. I don't think Henderson would be mad if you left and came back later.
But Steve hand waves the idea.
More trouble than it's worth. Besides, he adds, someone's got to make sure that you dipshits don't get into any trouble. You're too dangerous left to your own devices.
He flips the page. Michael Jordan's mid-shot on the cover.
Eddie wonders if Steve reads the whole thing, or if he just drools over the basketball playoffs and the car ads. But then,
He also wonders if Steve's really hanging out because he can't be bothered to trek home. It's been a rough few months for all of them. Dustin's at the Sinclair house more often than not. Nancy calls the Byers/Hopper residence from the school payphone almost every day. And there is always, always someone at the Mayfield trailer. Even if it happens to be Uncle Wayne on his day off. Eddie wouldn't be surprised if Steve's simply scared to let everybody out of his sight for too long, just in case shit goes down that he's not there to beat back with a large oar. Max is here tonight, though. She's putting up a hell of a fight, too. Same as Elle, who's still trying to grasp the rules, but is determined to make the correct tactical decision at every turn. Eddie's definitely gained some new sheep. "Can I cast a protection spell?" she asks. Lucas frowns at her character sheet. "I don't think it's worth the risk," he says slowly. "You're a tank. You've got tons of defense. You might be better attacking it head on. But the rest of you will be vulnerable."
"Not all of us. Dustin said he'd be fine," Max chips in.
"Yeah, but only because Gargus Marbleguard is a dwarf," says Dustin, obviously trying to exercise some patience. "You're a rogue human. Elle's a human fighter. Everyone else is a goddamn human. And manticores want to eat human flesh above anything else in the world. I'm literally only going to survive because I'm less delicious."
"I roll to feed Dustin's dwarf to the manticore," Max says flatly, picking the D20 from the table, and everyone else erupts into protests and bickering.
"Shut up! Shut up!" Eddie yells. He waves his arms, attempting to clear the idiocy from the atmosphere. "Jesus, Mike, sit down! Everyone needs to give her a chance to think, okay? Remember, you're playing as a fighter, Elle. Sarah the Strong has some really good melee attacks.
And if we figure this out, Sarah the Strong's gonna get a huge share of the gold, too," adds Will.
Elle glares at the dungeon map. "Maybe we shouldn't be using brute force," Dustin considers. Lucas looks like he's internally praying. "What else are we gonna do? We don't have enough power for a coordinated attack, but everyone except for Elle doesn't have enough defense to survive. We're doomed."
"I might not be doomed," says Erica, examining her fingernails.
"Lady Applejack is half-elf. Ergo, only half delicious." Max, shrugging with agreement, is a stark contrast besides Elle, who is beginning to look increasingly anxious. Mike bursts out with something exasperated, and Erica starts arguing with him again, and then the boys join in, and Eddie jumps to his feet, 10 seconds away from tearing his hair out, plus all of their hair, too. There's a rustling from the couch.
"Oh, for the love of God, can you pull your heads out of your butts for 5 minutes? Steve says, and he sits up straight.
"There's nothing wrong with using some brute force if you're smart about it, Henderson. Your tank is right there. So use her. Fire off some artillery and let your little guys sneak past while your enemy is distracted. Elle's attack is only gonna work if the rest of you work with her. She can't shoulder the team's entire operation."
Then he runs his tongue over his teeth and returns to his sports articles.
Eddie shares a look of surprise with Will. Erica looks downright alarmed.
Across the table, Max closes Mike's open mouth for him, and he slaps at her hand.
"Sorry, like, what?" sputters Lucas.
Steve huffs.
"Who the hell is coaching the Tigers these days? Have you never used a big player as a distraction before?"
He licks his finger, grimacing, and swipes past some commentary about ice hockey.
"Jesus, this is painful. Good luck to you, Elle. Sheesh."
The players attempt to gauge each other's reactions. He's got a good point, Dustin admits. Max rolls her eyes. Dustin, you wouldn't know a good point if you sat on one.
Screw you!
Guys, Will tries, but he's overshadowed by Steve. You'll all be hitchhiking home, he warns. I could leave right now, hit the road, and refuse to come back for you. It'd be easy.
You wouldn't, Erica says, narrowing her eyes.
It's true. He totally wouldn't.
Face it, Harrington, Eddie says, and puts his hands on his hips before jutting his weight out.
We are some kind of after-school dads, my friend. Extracurricular fathers. A real pair of paternal putzes.
You're just saying that because you don't want to drop them home, Steve retorts.
Which is also true. Ella's playing with the D20 nervously. If you can all think of a ranged attack, she says carefully, I could be a distraction for this turn. Then we can all live.
Sounds good to me, says Eddie.
He takes his seat again and tries to shoot her a reassuring smile. She returns it.
Which is a good sign, right?
Lucas leans over and starts walking her through some attacks she could use. But Mike wrinkles his nose.
Hey, Steve, did you think Elle was actually piloting a tank? Like, for real?
You don't pilot a tank, you drive it. Steve bites back and resumes flicking through his magazine. Eddie hides his grin behind his DM's guide.
That wasn't a no.
But it does prove that Steve's not doing a very good job of ignoring them after all. Three.
2 weeks from graduation, and he can't even enjoy the victory.
Can you believe this? Eddie complains. And because it happened on the way home, I can't even snitch about it. The school isn't gonna do shit.
Steve doesn't answer with words, but he does, while he gathers supplies.
Hell, I bet Principal Higgins wishes he could have done it himself.
It'd be a good way to get you to cut your hair for the stage, Steve muses.
We're trying to avoid that, Steve. Please.
Eddie wiggles uncomfortably, because he's currently sat in a chair in the Harringtons' kitchen with a towel around his neck, his head at a funny angle, and a huge wad of gum lodged right at the base of his right ear.
Fucking basketball. Fucking juicy fruit. As soon as he gets his hands on it, Eddie's gonna shove that diploma right up the coach's ass.
Who did this to you? Says Steve, unscrewing a jar of Jif.
Number 10. Aaron, I think.
Steve says knowingly.
He starts to separate Eddie's hair from the gum tangle and ties a chunk of it back with elastic.
Yep, he's a dick. Sorry, man.
Not your fault. You're helping me, Eddie reminds him.
And when it comes to hair, of course Steve Harrington's the go-to man.
Eddie hears it more than witnesses it. The Jif makes a sad, deep little squelching noise when Steve digs the spoon into it.
He tries not to grimace at the sound of it being rubbed into his hair.
Apparently, peanut butter breaks up chewing gum. Who knew?
This is gross, he decides.
Yep, says Steve, concentrating.
But you're not the one touching it.
True. I do feel like toast, though. Eddie guesses not many people can make that particular claim.
Where'd you even learn this, dude?
Steve reaches for the spoon again.
Nancy's kid brother used to come home with all sorts of shit in his hair, he says. He'd never let me near it, of course, but I used to give Nancy tips on avoiding a vicious haircut. It seemed to work out okay.
Makes sense, says Eddie, because Mike is a truly pitiful string bean of a child. That little dweeb definitely looks like he'd lose the food fight and the food war. Allergic to seeing a barber, too. Same as you.
Eddie pouts, but doesn't come up with any retort swift enough for the situation. Steve's doing him a favor, after all, so he probably shouldn't piss off the guy with the bespoke rescue strategy. Getting rinsed down in the Harrington's kitchen sink wasn't on his to-do list for today. But apparently, it's fucking happening.
This is a nasty one. It's pretty high up.
Yeah, that would have been a drastic cut. Eddie is struck with a fierce gratitude all over again. This could have been bad.
With ear curls?
Definitely, says Steve, punctuating it with a wry little grin. And he couldn't pull off a buzz cut, so...
Happy to be of service?
Eddie jerks upright defensively. Steve pushes his shoulders back against the counter so that he doesn't get water everywhere like a wet dog.
I can so pull off a buzz cut. I've done it before.
No, you haven't, Steve says kindly, and keeps rinsing. He's 10 seconds from reaching for the shampoo, and Eddie knows that it's the nice one from Steve's own shower. So he tries to sit still and stop bitching. Four. So Eddie hangs out with him after Hellfire Club nights in the Wheeler's basement, because Steve is a good guy. It's nice to kick it with someone who isn't part of Corroded Coffin. With that being said, it's weird as hell. He doesn't know jack fucking shit about real music.
I just don't understand why it sounds so happy, Steve's saying, narrowing his eyes toward the cover of The Number of the Beast. I thought this was supposed to be Satan music.
No, says Eddie. That's the point. None of those assholes even read the lyrics. It's about accidentally watching a ritual and getting messed up about it.
Huh, says Steve.
He's tapping his fingertips on his knee.
It sounds...
He starts. Eddie watches his nails bumping against the denim.
It sounds like a song Robin had to practice for band. God, what was it?
Then he starts humming along with the guitar riffs.
What?
Eddie stares at him. This is completely fascinating.
Oh! It's like when the saints go marching in! Steve grins, finally grasping at the answer.
Oh, Lord, I want to be in that number. All that jazz. Literally, he adds.
Eddie doesn't know that much about brass instruments, but he'll trust Buckley's musical talents.
I don't think you want to be in this number, he laughs, tapping the album cover with his knuckles.
It didn't work out so well for the singer. Here, let me switch this over. We can listen to something else.
The rest of the LP probably isn't going to be Steve's cup of tea, regrettably, so it's for the best. Eddie shuts off the record player entirely and switches to whatever tape he left in the machine last.
Ah, slippery when wet. This is way more up your street, he grins,
and Bon Jovi's scratchy voice scrapes its way into Eddie's bedroom.
I take it you're familiar? God knows he played it enough times at Hellfire.
But whatever Eddie's done, it's making Steve frown even harder at the tape deck.
Are you doing this on purpose?
Uh-oh.
Doing what?
Playing songs that sound like other songs, Steve says. And there's an odd, wild glint in his eyes, in some kind of recognition that Eddie's not privy to. Yet.
Wait here a sec. I just gotta go in my car. Are you leaving? Eddie asks incredulously.
It's You Give Love a Bad Name. He's got no freaking idea what that would even sound like in another song. But Steve has already scrambled to his feet and bolted for the door, without so much as a believable excuse.
Harrington. What the hell?
Eddie props himself up on his elbows, listening to the clattering of the screen door and the distant crunch of Steve's passenger door being wrenched open. Eventually, the approach of lumbering footsteps grows ever nearer, and Steve bursts back into the bedroom with a cassette held aloft.
Listen, he says seriously. Listen, it's the same. What in the hell are you talking about?
Says Eddie, bewildered.
But it's too late.
Steve's already attacking the tape deck with an urgent sort of mania. Bon Jovi cuts out. Steve wedges the other cassette in and fast forwards until he hits the track he wants.
Is this Bonnie Tyler? Eddie asks incredulously.
He is tearing through the J cards of both cassettes.
Yeah, it is. I knew I'd heard this before. It's been bugging me for weeks. Look, it's the same name.
Eddie peers into his personal space, practically hooking his chin over Steve's shoulder to read the credits.
Lo and fucking behold, both of the tracks were written by Desmond Child.
Christ, he grins. That's a hell of an ear you've got there, Harrington.
Can you hear it? Hell yeah, I can hear it. They're totally the same.
I know, Steve cries.
I know, Eddie yells back gleefully. How the hell did you do that?
God, I do it constantly nowadays. I used to be pretty on the ball with listening to tunes and stuff anyway, but I feel like I've got to keep it up after the whole thing with the Russians. Secret transmission. I recognize a song in the background of the code, Steve explains as an aside.
It's still complete nonsense to Eddie.
I couldn't translate, and I couldn't do that technical radio stuff, so, yeah. It's sort of like how that one George Harrison song sounds like that one oldies girl band.
Which one?
Asks Eddie. Steve scrunches up his face. Can't remember. I don't own the record that has a song on, because, well, I dated this chick who loved 60s music once, and long story short, she totally thought he ripped them off too. Then he doo-doo-doos his way through the tune. Eddie tries to commit it to memory.
Jazz? He's not so good at. Girl pop from 20 years ago? Different story, because bizarrely enough, it's given a fuckload of material to heavy metal.
60s nut. Are you talking about Terry with the big hair? Steve lights up.
Yeah, Terry Booker. She was in my English class. Super cute. Really into Motown.
How long ago did you date her? Eddie asks.
A little after Star Court?
He thinks. It was still warm out, so September last year, maybe?
Ah, so it's post-Nancy, but pre-Vecna.
Eddie adjusts Bonnie Tyler's volume on the deck and tries not to make eye contact.
Didn't work out, huh?
Nah, Steve says, and exhales heavily.
I'm telling you, man, my parents were not happy when they found me and her by the pool. Jeez, that was a racist freaking day. I wouldn't have wanted to be involved with me either after that.
Ouch.
The Harringtons are a traditional kind, I take it,
he asks gingerly. And Steve winces instantly, like a reflex.
Yep,
he says shortly. The J cards get wedged back into their respective cases.
I'm not putting anyone else through that again. Jesus Christ, man.
It's hardly a difficult conclusion to come to. Steve's parents sound like total assholes.
They probably don't even know he's accumulated a gaggle of adopted children.
Well, Steve, Eddie says, tilting his head and beaming a sharp-toothed smile his way.
I, for one, appreciate your musical attention to detail. Okay? Shut up,
he snorts. But he looks pleased about it all the same. Five. But I do not understand, Elle insists, which sets off another round of groaning. Elle, if you don't stop bringing it up, then they'll never stop whining about it.
We're not whining, Max. We're helping. She needs to know.
Know what, exactly? Max asks. That the trilogy could have been a book shorter if Tolkien had gone with her idea instead?
Eddie is trying very hard to be patient with these children. But with every passing second, he is scanning the room more thoroughly for something to bludgeon them with.
Will you shut up about the eagles? But it would have been so much faster, Max insists.
Eddie's gonna fucking pass out. Did you enjoy how long the book lasted?
Yes.
Did you like the extra adventuring the Fellowship did, which would have been circumnavigated by the addition of giant eagle travel?
Yes, Elle mumbles.
Then what the fuck is the problem? He seethes. You got a neat little story with a huge variation of obstacles to overcome. It would have been boring if they rode the eagles all the way to Mount Doom.
Plus, it's a shitty plan, Steve says.
Every single person at the table crams their yap and slowly stares at Steve. As usual, he's lounging on the couch, flicking through one of his stupid sports magazines.
What did you say?
Mike asks, cautious and suspicious and pointy. And honestly,
Eddie's with him there.
This is becoming too common for his liking.
I said, says Steve,
who hasn't even bothered to look up from his soccer article or car advertisement or whatever,
that it would be a shitty plan. The mountain would be able to see them coming, first off, and the eagle's basically a dude. He had, like, thoughts and stuff. Gandalf was cashing in a favor. He wasn't recruiting the bird into the frickin' Fellowship, man. He couldn't be an asshole about what he needed doing. It had to be reasonable. Do you want to piss off a giant eagle with brains and thoughts?
There is a silence.
That's what I thought. Steve finishes. Then he flips the page.
Eddie shares a look with Dustin, who's gone as white as a sheet, and Erica, who genuinely seems a little bit distressed.
Who are you? She asks. And what have you done with Steve Harrington?
This finally makes Steve glance up.
Vaguely annoyed by the insinuation, yes, but looking the group in the eyes all the same. I can actually read, you know, he says, with a curl of his top lip. Seeing as you shitheads insist on speaking in total nonsense, even when we're all in mortal freaking peril, I finally gave in and tried to decipher what the hell you were talking about. Our lives might depend on my understanding your badly timed fantasy crap, so.
He gestures toward the box set that Eddie had allowed Elle to borrow.
If you ask me, that bit by Cherry and Cornwallis should have been called Old Forest Road, he adds.
And then that asshole goes right back to thumbing through his stupid magazine!
God!
Eddie crosses his legs as inconspicuously as he can.
I'm scared, Lucas mumbles. I don't know about you, but I feel a whole lot safer, actually,
mutters Will. And, as usual, he's completely and utterly correct. And one.
Turns out, Steve Harrington is full of surprises. For a start, He reads way more than Eddie expected him to. He reads car magazines and sports articles. He reads the lyrics printed onto album sleeves. And, staggeringly enough, he reads Tolkien. Even though he doesn't particularly want to, because it might save all their lives one day. And Steve listens. Enough to work out what to read, to make connections between music tastes that aren't even his own, to offer tactical advice regarding their lame nerd game, to figure out that Eddie didn't want to die a single man. But also that Eddie didn't want to die in a hurriedly straight relationship. That Eddie wouldn't immediately hit him for suggesting a solution for that part. Because he'd mentioned nursing a big fat crush on Josh Brolin. So, like, Steve Harrington probably isn't straight either. Terrifying. The worst part? Like, sure, they're friends now, but Steve had applied for this romantic vacancy when he and Eddie had only been tentatively friends for around a week. Which isn't very long at all, and probably signifies that Eddie-related thoughts have been bubbling under the surface of Steve's consciousness for a while. Double terrifying. Triple, maybe. And now Eddie has to work out how he's gonna handle it.
Easier said than done.
Ah, fuck. He should have seen this coming. Brand from the Goonies is exactly the kind of jerk jock with a noble streak that makes for some disgusting personal foreshadowing.
Eddie's revolted at his own predictability.
Before he manages to fully consider how he's gonna deal with his big old dumbass feelings, one last surprise smacks Eddie around the face like a rowboat paddle.
I got you something, Steve says, as Eddie folds himself into the BMW.
God, it's so low down. Shift your fucking legs, man. I gotta open the glove compartment.
Why didn't you open it before I got in the car? Eddie complains.
He knees himself in the chin, trying to get out of the way, as Steve rummages through the mess of maps, salt packets, Kleenex, and God knows what else. Also, you didn't have to get me anything. What the hell, Steve? I didn't get you anything.
Sure you did. We're literally about to smoke up in your yard.
Okay, here you go. I didn't wrap it or anything, so don't expect any fanfare. No, says Eddie. I demand fanfare. And then he looks at the weights that have landed in his lap. Steve hums. One of them is a brown slab, wrapped in plastic. There's a book underneath it. Ceramics for Beginners by Zara Waterman.
You mentioned it once, Steve sang.
They both know full fucking well that it was during the weird moment Eddie let slip that he liked guys in the Upside Down, but neither of them are going to bring it up.
You said you'd never done it, so I thought, hey, when better to start than when we're out of our minds and totally unskilled? It'll be an awesome disaster. Besides, I couldn't find any classes in Hawkins, so I thought it'd be more fun and funnier if we tried it together.
Fucking pottery. Of all the things for Steve to have remembered, it's this throwaway tidbit. And this is Steve he's talking about here, so of course he'd taken matters into his own hands. And he's never made a fucking terrible teapot. So Steve bought some clay and some stupid book, and he thought maybe they could knock it off the bucket list.
We don't have to do it, says Steve, who is, faltering.
It's Eddie's fault. He hasn't said anything yet.
He feels like he might cry, actually.
Did you buy this? He asks him.
Duh, I didn't exactly dig the clay out of the quarry dirt. Come on, man. Yeah, that'd have been a stupid question.
Eddie turns the block over in his hands, cold and solid and ready to become something amazing.
Can we do it next time?
He asks it tentatively, hoping that his voice won't break. Except it does. And so does Steve's heart a little bit. Visibly, too.
Sure, he offers. If you just want to smoke, then we can save it. That's okay. I just thought... No, it's not that, says Eddie.
Before he fully knows what he's doing, he's reaching for Steve's face, directing his jaw and murmuring sentence fragments into his mouth.
It's this, he says. It's this.
Kiss.
It's fucking this, Steve. I thought we could do this tonight instead. Yeah. Okay, says Steve,
dumbstruck and suddenly kissing back and fighting against the tether of his seatbelt. He kisses like he's frightened because he hasn't realized that Eddie started it. He kisses all softly and staccato, drawing back every so often before dipping in again. There's a big hand in Eddie's hair and nothing but the transmission between them. But Eddie sits back. The strain of leaning across is getting to his arms.
Eddie, are you crying right now? Fuck, man,
he mumbles and has to wipe his eyes a little bit. I want it to be cool. This isn't cool.
No, Steve agrees. But it is mutual.
Jesus, he's cute. Eddie lays one on him again, just to make sure he knows.
No, it would be cool, Steve asks him.
He cracks a wobbly smile against Steve's top lip.
What?
Steve draws away entirely and breaks into an amused little smirk.
Selling out Madison Square Garden, he says. That was on your agenda too, right? Oh my god, I can't believe you remembered all that. If you keep crossing stuff off my bucket list, I'm going to start worrying about poison in my coffee,
Eddie tells him.
You don't have to die once you complete the list, you dipshit.
I could die happy right this second, says Eddie, completely honestly. He kind of means it as a joke, too, but Steve doesn't laugh. In fact, the smile completely falls from his face.
Don't say that,
he murmurs. His hands find their way onto Eddie's jaw, either side, and he feels them being drawn together again. Magnetized, he thinks.
Don't say that, Eddie. Let's make shitty pottery and smoke each other out and talk about your stupid nerd crap, okay?
They're not short on evenings to do all this in. Except for Hellfire Nights, but Steve's always at those anyway.
They can compare music, watch a movie, maybe.
Eddie calls dibs on the Goonies. Now that he's probably not gonna die a single man, it might even be fun. He lets a smile drag across his mouth.
You're gonna need to explain the eagle thing to me again,
he says, as Steve shakily laughs into his mouth.
I swear, I gotta react to it in real time. I'll make it worth your while, Harrington.
And he does.
He freaking does.
The end. Reader's notes. Sua, I requested permission from NB Future Boy to record this many, many eons ago. And then, because I am so counterproductive to my own better interests, because I had permission, I did not work on it. I know, not helpful in the slightest, but that's kind of the way things are in my brain. So, it took a while to get around to it, and then I was like, oh god, is this not Eddie's voice? I can hear it so perfectly while reading the prose, and I was like, kind of second-guessing all of my takes. It's been a minute since I've been that weird about my own recording, but hopefully I did not second-guess it so much that you cannot enjoy things.
This is such a delightful story. I really loved all of the bits of it, and the way that, like, Steve knows Eddie and shows he knows, and that whole, like, acts of service, like, not really acts of service, but, like, showing you have been paying attention to the things that your partner cares about. It's just really lovely, for me, specifically. Also, in case you, like me the first time I read through this, are not well-versed in George Harrison's catalog, the bit about the George Harrison versus the Oldies girl group is the song, what was it, My Sweet Lord by George Harrison, and He's So Fine by the Chiffons. And there was actually a very, very big copyright infringement lawsuit in the 70s about it. I did some Googling. You can do that too. So it would have been sort of topical information for Steve, if not totally modern, then just sort of like that background knowledge you know from living through the news. And then the musical clips that are in there are Bon Jovi's Shot Through the Heart and Bonnie Tyler's If You Were a Woman and I Was a Man. So those bits as well. Always a very fun time to put musical clips in a podfic because I love a sound effect. It's a joy. Thank you so much to NB Future Boy for giving me permission to record this. I am sorry it took as long as it did. Hopefully, though, the wait was worth it. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Have a nice day.